Well, yeah, but everybody has their shortcomings.
Yeah.
You had something that the other people didn't have. You had vision.
Oh, I was going to say balls.
Yeah, well, vision and balls. You have to buy them at different stores, but...
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. It's the fucking 2 million download podcast that everybody's talking about because they get information they can actually use. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling and my latest book, Get Shit Done, and I'd like to introduce you to my fabulous wife.
Hello, hello. I'm Jen Gittimer, author of Sales in a New York Minute. And on the show, we interview leaders in business, leaders in sales, leaders in personal development, people who are going to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales, have fun, and make more money.
Listen up, everybody. Grab a pencil, grab a pen, grab your phone, grab anything that's near you, take notes, and put it into action.
All right, let's get into it. It's time to sell or die. All right, diehards, please help me welcome Steve Benson. Steve is the founder and CEO of Badger Maps. After receiving his MBA from Stanford, he worked in sales at IBM and Google, where he was Google's Enterprise's top sales executive in 2009.
Whoa, I wonder what that income was. we're not going to ask him, diehards, but I'm telling you, it was a fucking ton of money.
Then, in 2012, he founded Badger Maps, which is a software company that helps field salespeople optimize their routes and schedules. It basically helps you save time and be on time so you can sell more. It's freaking awesome. Steve also has his own show. He's the host of the Outside Sales Talk podcast, and he interviews industry experts on their top sales tips.
Please help us welcome the great Steve Benson.
Woo! Steve, hey guys. We're glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, there's a myth among outside salespeople that they actually know where they're going and that they know how to optimize their time.
One of the greatest myths of all time.
It is, because inside people think the outside guys is out there playing golf, going to the movies, having a 3-hour lunch
some
with a martini.
Some of them are.
Yeah, some of them. Right. They've created their own reputations, like a car sales guy. Mm-hmm. They've created their own reputation for 100 years.
Listen, diehard, if you're going to do something stupid like that, don't post it on Facebook.
Bingo. Or don't let people track where you actually are. How did you found the company?
Well, my background actually, like you mentioned, is in outside sales, and I was working at Google in outside sales at the time on the mapping product that they have. And so I'm actually not like a genius founder that has brilliant ideas. It was kind of like, oh, this is my problem. And I kind of sell the piece of software that you would build on top of to solve it.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Waze kind of software or what kind of?
No, so we integrate with Waze. So Waze would tell you how to like avoid traffic and get around from point to point, right? So that's what we do, is put a field salesperson's territory on a map, all the customers, all the prospects, all the data about all these things, mm-hmm. and allow them to build routes and figure out who to focus on given where they're going to be. So we allow them to incorporate the element of geography into their day-to-day decisions.
And was this based on like your experience being out there in the field?
Right. So, I mean, I had experienced the problem, myself firsthand for, my whole sales career, but what made me build the company wasn't that I found it to be a thing that I was wasting a half hour a day on. It was more that VPs of sales and sales operations leaders kept coming to Google and saying, and talking to me because I was the one selling the map products, saying, hey, we have this problem and it seems like you guys are the ones that would solve it. And, our our reps are, you know, out in the field and would like to be, would like to know where their customers are around them, would right. like to be able to get new, figure out where the prospects are around them, and they'd like to be able to plan their time when they're out there. Can you guys fix this? And Google's like, that's a small problem for us. We look at, you know, we do the big problems, like, you know, problems that are like that. If it's not worth $1 billion, you're not going to get me out of bed in the morning.
So, that's amazing. And so so you just jumped on the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, Google passed, and they were like, yeah, it's not big enough for us, but it, you know, all the smart people were all in the room and said, someone should build this. You know, that's why we have this map. And we you know, so the Google Maps makes the Google Maps API, so it's basically a mapping platform that you can build software on top of. So they make that, and they're like, yeah, we make this so that other people can build things like this that end users would use. And someone they basically said, so everyone was in the room basically saying, someone should build this. And I was kind of like, maybe I should build it. Right.
Raise your hand. Right? That's classic. Okay, that is so, totally classic.
Wait, so you have this great income. You're doing great at Google. And then what was it like taking that leap?
You know, it's a big leap, and I don't always recommend people do this, right? Like it's worked out for me, obviously, but
yeah. But did you know that it was going to work out before you took the leap?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of an arrogant idiot. I thought I was sure it was going to work 100%. I thought it was going to be 10 to 20 times easier than it was. So,
right. You know, what were some of the struggles you experienced?
Well, it's really hard to build software.
I can only imagine. Like, I just hello. Like to turn it on and use it, and right. it works.
Exactly.
I can't imagine right. the building side of
well,
it.
Well, keep in mind, though, that you're talking to a couple of Jews that feast on Apple Macintosh. So we're we're not going to be the most...
like plug and play.
Yeah, plug and play. We're plug and players.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's challenging to build software. It's challenging to build a company. And, you know, kind of those two things combined... It's an industry where it's really hard to get something out of the gate. So that getting the train moving on the tracks takes a lot of force. Once the train's moving in software, it's a great business. And because, you know, it's almost like if you had a hotel and you work really hard to build out the first floor of the hotel, and it's just, you know, it takes years and it's really challenging. And the second you can fill the hotel, you can literally just press return and have a second floor. And a third floor and a fourth floor infinitely up into the sky. That's what the software business is like.
Were people willing to fund you?
So we did a friends and family round, and after that, and that means you know, getting people that you know basically to give you, selling pieces of the company to people that you know in exchange for money. And that was enough to feed me peanut butter and the early engineers I hired peanut butter until the thing was
smooth or chunky. Just so we keep this.
Oh, I prefer smooth, but I'll eat chunky too.
When you're hungry, I got you. Okay, cool.
But it's challenging to get these things out of the gate, but it's really rewarding if you do.
Okay, so what was it like when you made the switch from selling other people's stuff to now selling your baby? Like, what mm-hmm. kind of mindset shifts did you have to make, and what did you have to do to be able to have that confidence when you walked in with anyone to make the sale?
The confidence wasn't the problem for me. I mean, starting a software company, the problem is the software doesn't work that well. So shockingly, when I was at Google, the things that I was, the products that I was selling and working with, they worked really, really well. It's a huge company with brilliant engineers, and the stuff they have works, right? Mm-hmm. Like when was the last time your Gmail didn't work?
Never.
Right. Never.
And it maybe it hiccuped in like 2011, but that was the last
time. Yeah, I can't even remember.
Are they still reading it?
Yeah, yes, they are.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure they are.
Just checking. They're like Santa Claus. I wrote about them a couple of years ago. They know when you're sleeping. They know when you're awake. They know if you're bad. They know if you're good, and they read your mail.
Yeah, and you know, people think, oh, they're evil. In general, they just want to give you more relevant ads, but they do.
I don't think they're evil. I think they're just a business trying to create profit. But that's mm-hmm. a whole other podcast.
They're just so huge that people are afraid.
So yeah, we have a lot of people in this position where they go work for a company and they're selling a software that's continually being developed. And I know I've been there where you're risking your own reputation because mm-hmm. it's your name on the line for the product that may or may not be 100% working.
Or acceptable to the people that buy it thinking it's mm-hmm. going to do something when it actually doesn't quite do that.
So right. how do and you overcome that?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're a company and you're purchasing a piece of software, you really expect it to work. I mean, it's fine if the Kitty app on your phone doesn't work as a consumer perfectly. But like if you're a company and you know, people's salaries are on the line, people's jobs are on the line, it's got to function. And, yeah. and a salesperson can be hired a lot of times for their Rolodex, right? By an early stage company. And it's their job to sell the thing, whether or not the thing works. Sometimes explicitly it doesn't even work yet. And they're being told to sell this thing at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And that's a skill in and of itself, especially if a salesperson can do that. I think that is a risk that salespeople are, especially if they're putting their name and their Rolodex on the line mm-hmm. and selling to people they've done business with in the past. And, you know, frankly, I mean, to be totally candid, we had regular issues with the product from 2012. So I started building it in 2012 until 2016.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, just that problems continually pop up. Right. And we don't have very many problems today, but that's because, you know, there's a large engineering team and they work out the bugs and they test for problems before they release things. And so it's pretty occasional that something sneaks through that doesn't work. And when it does, we usually release it to just 2% of our user base first. And then that 2% catches it.
How has your user base grown? How many people are using it right now?
There's about 5,000 companies using Badger Maps.
Wow.
There's a lot of field sales is a very horizontal market, right? A lot of companies in a lot of different industries go to market with field salespeople. I mean, you know, it's funny because here in the Valley where I live, people don't think field sales is that big of a thing because software gets sold over the phone mm-hmm. effectively. There's a few software products, obviously, like if you're selling, $2 million Oracle databases, you're taking people out to steak dinners, but in general, software is sold over the phone. And so there's a lot of tools for inside sales teams, but there's not that much focus on field sales teams. But if you're selling auto parts in Ohio or med devices exactly. anywhere or pharmaceuticals, there's tons and tons of industries where the way you go to market is with field sales. The way to get in front of a doctor is with a field salesperson. Yeah. And those are the industries where we've really been able to do well in.
Are the field sales forces growing or are they trying to transfer back to inside?
They're growing on the balance. I think this is industry based, right? So in the software industry, they're shrinking precipitously. Mm-hmm. In med device, they're growing. Well, the companies in med device that are where the company is growing, they're growing their field sales team. And so it just depends on the industry.
I know in the pharmaceutical industry, for example, they were eliminating salespeople for a while because they couldn't get through to the doctors.
That's a unique situation. So the pharmaceutical industry just has a lot of regulations put upon it, and there were some regulations passed that effectively made it very difficult for them to sell.
Right, like you can't buy the guy lunch.
Right, exactly. And there's a ton of rules around it, and that has been a challenge for the pharmaceutical industry to get their new products and new ideas to market.
Jen, I have to give myself a shout out today. I normally let other people shout for me, but I'm going to be the opening keynoter for the Boundless 2020 event put on by Nutshell CRM. It's going to be a virtual program that's going to feature a lot of other people, but I'm like the headline guy.
Woo!
And I'm going to be talking about competitive advantage. But I'm going to be putting a spin on it that most people have never even heard of. And that's why I'm challenging you not just to be there, but to be there actively, take notes so you can turn it into action. But I'm going to explain to you how I create my competitive advantages, and how you can create a competitive advantage for yourself every single time you make a sales call. Woo.
Well, Mr. Selfie shout out.
Yeah.
A little birdie told me that this entire event is a virtual conference that you can watch from like the comfort of your couch.
Pajamas for popcorn.
Yeah. And that it's free.
Yeah, exactly.
That's freaking amazing.
So there are a lot of these things. I only agreed to do this because they gave me free rein for what I needed to say. It was not a commercial, which is really important to me. And it has information that the audience can use.
Yeah.
I'm not about to sell anything at the end of it. I'm going to give you value. Thank you very much for being there. And then go home.
Wait, you're not going to sell anything?
Nope.
But you're a sales guy.
I know, but it's every once in a while, it's a value first deal.
All right, cool. Hey, go to that show note, click on that link, and register for Boundless 2020. I want to go back to what you were talking about because when I was working at a software company, we had some issues where we told our salespeople they could promise something by a certain date. It didn't happen on time. Our salespeople then, when they had to sell the new product, were very reluctant. Mm-hmm. And when I surveyed salespeople to find out what was going on and why they weren't selling the new thing, the general consensus around the board was they didn't have belief that it would release on time, and they were fearful for their reputation. So we did a lot of things by bringing the team together to recreate those beliefs and instill literally confidence in the salespeople back into the company, right? But what would you recommend to, from both sides, both to leaders who are working with salespeople that are selling software or anything that may have bugs or some sort of obstacle or something like that, what would you recommend the leaders do to help their salespeople get back on track? And conversely, what would you recommend the salespeople do so that they're not distracted by those bugs and they're focusing with the customers on the actual like promise and delivery of the amazing outcome that they can provide?
Yeah, there's a lot to this. For starters, I believe that everyone in a company has to be a product manager to some degree, especially anyone who interacts with customers. Mm-hmm. So if you're a salesperson, it's really important to get feedback back to the product management team, back to the engineering team, about what's working and not working for your customers.
Without being a whiner.
Oh yeah.
You gotta be a whiner sometimes. I mean, you gotta really put pressure.
There's a difference though. There has to be a productive whine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to be productive. You have to impress upon the engineering and product teams, who often they'll have a goal that isn't necessarily totally aligned with the customers. Like their goal is to finish this new product line or get this new thing that's, you know, executives thought was strategic out the door, and they can leave the existing product and therefore the existing customers behind. And so I think sometimes you have to be willing to pound the table if you're in sales or customer success hey, we've got to get the existing product working before you build the next product, before we build the second floor on this building, we got to work on the foundation. Let's finish. Like here are the issues with the foundation. Let's go back and fix those before we put on another floor.
Does that instill confidence in the salespeople that go out in the field?
I think you don't want to lose the confidence of your sales team. But if you're a salesperson and you've already lost confidence, this is probably why, right?
Yeah.
They gave you a thing, you brought it to you, you email blasted all your customers about the new thing. They said yes and started it up and kicked it off, and then it didn't work.
Right.
And you know, if you're at a company that does that, because it is kind of a philosophy, right? There's the move fast, break things philosophy. And there's the customer comes first, and we got to get this thing working before we, you know, don't screw over any of our customers' philosophy. And most companies are somewhere in the middle on that continuum. If you're a salesperson at a move fast, break things company, I would recommend when there's a new thing, release it to one of your customers who you know is okay if things aren't perfect and has kind of is also a move fast, break things type place. Make sure the thing works, then release it to other customers. Don't, you know, just because something's released, don't rush out and get it in front of all your customers. Let the new guy do that.
Well, but here's the deal, though. You're a salesperson. And most CEOs did not start out as salespeople. They started out as entrepreneurs or whatever.
Right.
And they hire salespeople. You could actually go with your sales guy go, hey, you know, dude, I'm coming with you to make sure this customer feels good about buying our product.
Right. And so we're a weird company like that, obviously. Like,
you're not
I'm
weird.
Not,
I think that's the right way to be.
I think that's the way.
I mean, I think it's the way to be. It's worked for us, but I'm the exception, not the rule. And most VCs right. don't love seeing this, right? A lot of large companies are run by salespeople. A lot of small technology companies are the leadership team, the founders started on the engineering side. They started building the product, engineering the product,
right.
which is a common problem because it's real easy for when you're on that side of things to drift away from what the customer actually wanted. Whereas for me, you know, I don't actually code. So early in the, I ran the marketing and the sales and the business side of the company when it was small. Now my world is much smaller than that, really. But you know, there's people running all those things, and I just sit here and drink coffee. But
what kind?
This is actually tea right now, but earlier it was coffee, so I switch it up. But we
do you have a brand? Our brand is Death Wish.
Yeah, we like this coffee called Death Wish Coffee.
Oh, we've actually had that in the office before. It packs a punch.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah, it's real good.
Don't worry, I'm on my third cup, so right. I'll be like warmed up.
I'm only on number two.
Oh, wow. You've had three cups of Death Wish? That'll do you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happens when you have 4 hours of
she
sleep.
She would have been on time for this interview, but she was running up and down the hallway.
There you go.
You know, I think that one of the things I've done in the past when I was a sales rep was use the voice of customer to communicate back to that product team and back to the powers that be that are making those prioritization decisions. Because... Mm-hmm. If you do say it as a salesperson, oftentimes it comes off as you are whining, like, oh, the product doesn't have this and I can't sell it because it doesn't have that. And this doesn't worry. But when you
missed the deadline of launch.
Yeah. But when you well, that's a way bigger problem. But when you actually have an email from a customer or multiple customers stating the same thing, like, hey, I was using this and this thing was broken and didn't work, or I really needed to work in this way. And you can forward those as sort of like evidence that you're collecting that this is what the market needs. All of a sudden, now you have a way stronger case. And diehard, you should think about this as your job is not just to sell externally, but if you need the team within to do something else for you or to create something else, you need to sell internally too. So it's two sales a lot of the time.
From a career perspective, I believe that being able to sell up and down and laterally in your own organization internally is often something that develops, makes or breaks your career more so than the actual sales that you're bringing in from the outside.
Oh yeah, 100%.
So have you started writing your book yet?
Jeffrey's going to give you a title, I guarantee it, before this episode's out.
I have not written a book. You know, I've got the podcast and I've got a blog that I've spent a lot of time on over the years. I've got a bunch of videos I've done for salespeople, like teaching different skills. I'm a LinkedIn professor now. I've got a LinkedIn course where I know it's very exciting stuff. That's actually pretty cool. They like fly me down to Carpinteria, Southern California, by Santa Barbara, and like record me. And it's all very professional. They do a great job.
That's cool. And do you teach LinkedIn strategies or selling strategies?
No. Yeah. So LinkedIn bought this company, Lynda, which is like they'll train you for anything. And so I just teach like sales skills. I'm about to do a course on being a sales manager and what tricks of the trade you can use to be a better sales manager.
All right. So like give us some tricks.
Yeah.
All right. So one thing I'm going to teach is, this exercise that I like to do, which is to leverage the power of your team. So, you know, yoke the strength of your team. So sales managers, you know, aren't even the best person in the room to be selling a product. The best people in the room selling a product and having skill sets to do things are the people on your team. So, you know, write a list, you know, in a spreadsheet, you know, write a list of all the skills that are, that you think are the most important things to be successful on a team. Maybe do it with one of your most successful reps. And then across the top of the spreadsheet, write everyone on the team's name down, and then stack rank everyone on each one of those skills on a scale of 1 to 10 or however many reps you have. Identify who's the best at each one of these skills, and have them, empower them to teach a little class on that skill to the rest of the sales team.
So this is amazing. So after this, I have to send you an email and share with you this thing that one of our customers did. Jeffrey has a sales assessment, and it's the only skills-based assessment out there. So it judges, it can determine how good you are at networking and prospecting and cold calling and closing the sale and creating relationships, those kind of skills, right, mm-hmm. that you need to be good at to sell. And so one of our customers took his 10-person team, 10 or 15-people team, person team. He outlined the categories that are in our assessment, which we believe mm-hmm. are like the things you need to be good at to sell.
The buckets.
And then he literally mm-hmm. did exactly what you're saying. He used their assessment results. So if you mm-hmm. want to tie in this assessment to your course, that yeah. would be so cool. He totally. Used their assessment results, and he's like, okay. And then he color coded them, right? So he's like, all right, this guy is really good in these green areas, and this girl needs help in the red areas. And then he started looking for patterns within the team. So like, if everyone on the team needs help cold calling, perfect. I'm going to have them take a cold calling course this week. And right. it was so effective. They became the number one sales team in their industry.
It was minor league baseball team.
Okay.
They were number one in sales, number one in dollars, and number one in attendance for the entire year.
Wow.
And there's 250 teams in the United States.
No kidding.
Yeah. All is from, that cool or what?
All from assessing really cool. skills. Yeah.
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 I believe it. I mean, it's a simple exercise, doesn't take a lot of mental horsepower. And
no.
and frankly, you know, I'm a relatively lazy manager. I'm always looking for shortcuts like this. And it's literally a piece of cake. Like, all you have to do is like list out the skills and write down who's good at them. You can ask around to be like, you know, ask a few of the guys in the team or girls in the team who's great at what, and like
yeah.
take their feedback into account when you're kind of ranking everybody. I mean, you can even just create a little quick survey and send it around and ask people to rank, say who's the best at this and that, but then have them teach it.
The assessment proves it.
Oh, it's right. crazy cool. It's crazy.
Yeah, I love
send it
this idea.
After this. It's
yeah,
really
I'd love
awesome.
To see it. Yeah, yeah. Well, because there's not, you know, I would say asking people is one thing. If you guys have developed an actual, like, you know, way to kind of pick this apart and do it in a
no,
more.
Do it and compare both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that
why
would
not?
Be really cool.
I mean,
it's cool to see what people think they're good at and then what they're mm-hmm. actually good at.
Yeah. The right, assessment right. will not lie to you.
Yeah.
It's
no.
been proven thousands and thousands of yeah. times, and it comes with a 20-page report that, mm-hmm. that it's not best worst out of four. It's best, second best, third best, fourth best.
Well, okay. I'm altering my recommendation then. I think you should do it my way and your way, and
yeah.
have those two people, the winner of both ways,
right.
co-teach everyone
exactly.
else how to
I
do
love
that,
that
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the best way.
Sure.
When you involve your salespeople in coaching, it becomes a real team.
People want to yeah. listen to what they have to say and what's made them successful, yeah. for sure.
Yeah, and they'll spend their Sunday night figuring it out instead of you spending your Sunday night figuring
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, and as the manager, you're not the best person on your team at negotiating negotiating a deal at your company. The girl that's negotiated 40 deals is way better than you at this, right? Like, and as a manager of sales leadership, my job isn't to hire the person who's the best at being a salesperson, right? My job is to hire the person who's best at managing the sales team, mm-hmm. which is often, you know, one of my best sales managers was actually terrible at sales. Like he just was not a salesperson. Like he had the intelligence and the emotional intelligence to know that he was not good at this. But I think he was one of the best sales managers I ever had, and his team always overperformed because
wow.
he was great at being a sales manager. If you dropped him in a room with a customer, he knew to keep his mouth shut because he was just screwing things up
classic.
Left and right.
What do you think were some of the characteristics that made him so good at managing?
But I'd say his standout characteristic was not micromanage. He would change, he would shift the way he behaved for different people. So he would not micromanage you if you were successful. He would try to learn from you, like you know, he'd try to put you under a microscope and figure out what was making you successful. But the people that were not doing well, those are the ones that he would crawl all over. And so they just would have, if you were good on his team, you would have a totally different experience than if you were bad on his team. But I think even more importantly, I think he was great at hiring great people. Mm-hmm. Like his team was just, it was packed with high performers. And it's hard. I think hiring and interviewing is a really tough skill. I don't think I'm amazing at it, honestly. Like I think that if you sat him in a room and me in a room, a different room, and had us interview five people, he would pick one person to hire and I would pick another, and he'd be right and I'd be wrong. Like he's
but
just,
that's okay. That's why you hired him.
Yeah.
Well, no, he hired me.
Oh. Didn't really?
Yeah. This is when I was a rep.
That's cool.
This is a manager that I had when I was a sales rep. I learned a tremendous amount from him, but one of the things I learned was that he's better than me at this. And
wow. Like, yeah, but everybody has their shortcomings. You had something that the other people didn't have. You had vision.
Oh, I was going to say balls.
Yeah, well, vision and balls. You have to buy them at different stores, but when you wear them both, it's fundamental
people
for success.
People get offended by that word, by the way, but like, it's not offensive.
So,
this is amazing.
Yeah, a great interview. We have a producer who's in the background, and he's already messaging us. This is a great interview.
This is great. I love it. So, tell us about, before we go, tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So on my podcast, and you know, I'm not like a sales genius or anything, so it's not just me talking all day. What I've done instead was I bring sales leadership and people who are like thought leaders and are the great teachers in sales today, have written the coolest books about it, and just generally people that are, I find to be most influential in sales. And I bring them on the show. And before I bring them on the show, my marketing team like researches them and figures out what they're good at, what they know a lot about. And writes questions for me to ask them. I don't come up with them. I sound super smart sometimes, but actually it's not me. It's just, you know, the marketing team read their book, and then I ask questions. But the goal is to extract the most valuable information that this person knows out of them in 45 minutes. So like a good example, I had Joanne Black on the show. I don't know if you know her, but she's written like 3 or 4 books on how salespeople can optimize getting more referrals. And, you know, to me, that sounds like a lot of books to read on how to get referrals. But for the average salesperson, they probably don't want to read 3 books on how to get referrals, maybe 1. But in the course of a 50-minute show, I don't even know, 40-minute show for her, she gave some invaluable tips on how I think any salesperson could do better from getting more referrals. And she's just a wealth of knowledge in it. And because my marketing team had teed me up to ask the right questions and to tease out that valuable information from her. We got it out and that was a great episode. And so it's not a super long podcast. Like I've only done like 50 episodes, but it's with probably the 50, you know, it's with 50 of the great sales thought leaders of our time.
That's cool.
We'll check it out and confirm that.
it's called Outside Sales Talk. Check it out.
Yeah. All right. We'll totally check it out, and we'll be happy to come on our show and come on your show when you're invited.
If we might not be the thought leaders that we think we are.
No, I'd love to have you guys on. That'd be fantastic.
Steve, this was amazing.
Great,
thank you.
It's an amazing interview.
For coming on
insightful
our show.
For a CEO who's actually a salesperson in disguise. I love that.
I agree. That was awesome.
I feel like every CEO could use some sales training. I really do.
Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe. rate, and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.